There's some blebs in this house. 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 There's some blebs.
Cause you fucking with some broke ass bitches.
All right, everyone. You know who the fuck it is. It's K Mofo.
And the Butcher.
We got Banging and Slanging, the podcast where anything goes. And today, I am feeling very excited about the conversations that are to come. We have someone that is making some big waves in this field of sustainability. So we would love to introduce to you the Plastic Slayer.
Woo! Slaying that plastic. welcome.
Why don't you go ahead and tell the people about yourself, Mr. Slayer of Plastic.
All right. What's up, everybody? This is the Plastic Slayer here coming in from Santa Cruz, California, a.k.a. Christian Shaw is my alias. And stoked to be here on the Banging and Slanging podcast and talk all things plastic, sustainability, and yeah, let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So what got you into this field? Like, what was it for you that really made you realize fuck plastic?
Fuck plastic. Well, to be honest, it was the work of Five Gyres. You might be familiar with one of the bigger plastic pollution organizations out there. When I was at university, I took an introductory oceanography course. And one of the lessons was all about plastic pollution. And I remember really clearly these slides showing the five oceanic gyres and particularly the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and the concentration of plastic that had been discovered out there. And it just was sort of like a light bulb moment for me in terms of something that although I felt I was really knowledgeable about sustainability, wasn't really tuned into. As I started to look into it, I just realized more and more how connected it is to all these different aspects of sustainability and, you know, living in a healthier way on the planet. And so, yeah, that's where it started for me. And just kind of dove in from there.
So you were born and raised in California, or did you move out there? Have you always been like a water body, water person?
So to go back a little bit further, I have always been a water person, although I've only been here in Santa Cruz since 2017, actually the end of 2017. So coming up on 4 years. I'm from Ithaca, New York. So Ithaca is in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. And so I grew up on a lake, and I felt really fortunate to have a lot of exposure to the outdoors. And you know, I was into stuff like primitive pursuits, you know, making bow drills and hand drills and learning how to find, you know, forage for wild edibles and all those things as a kid. And then as I started to become more educated throughout my, you know, school career and getting into towards college, it just became more and more clear that, you know, my appreciation for the outdoors and the threats that, you know, I was starting to learn more about were going to send me in a direction, you know, around solving some of these issues. So
would you say that was how Plastic Tides was formed, or?
So the origin story of Plastic Tides is a little bit more specific than that, actually. So that's definitely sort of what set me on this in this direction and had me, you know, studying sustainability in college from an interdisciplinary perspective. I grew up landlocked, but had traveled to the ocean with my family every year and, you know, really liked surfing and wanted a career that could potentially take me to the coast. And so I was studying sustainability from a lot of different perspectives, maybe with the idea of being a sustainability consultant. I had looked at ocean engineering programs at other schools and things like that. And so, you know, it was just sort of trying to learn as much as I could and then see what opportunities would be available. And a National Geographic Young Explorers Grant workshop came to our university in the fall of 2012. And after some presentations, we broke out into a workshop, and I had an opportunity to pitch an idea that was inspired by my recent oceanography lesson to combine my passion for kiteboarding with an expedition to bring awareness to this giant garbage patch in the ocean, which at that time, you know, I was picturing a trash dump on the surface of the ocean and, you know, going out there with maybe like a hazmat suit and getting some aerial footage and creating this, you know, really visually striking display to open people's eyes to this problem. And that idea was really well received by the group. And so that kind of gave me some further inspiration and motivation. And I ended up actually distilling that idea down once I learned that the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is not visible from the air, or not really even visible from a boat unless you're looking really close. It's more like a plastic smog stratified through the water column. And, you know, this issue was way more complex than it seemed on the surface. And so that original idea was distilled down into a 10-day self-support stand-up paddleboard expedition around the island of Bermuda. And Bermuda is a small island in the Atlantic, a few hundred miles off the coast of the U.S., approximately around, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina. And it's really close to the North Pacific gyre. And so this is another area in the ocean where there's a concentration, higher concentration of plastics spinning around in the gyre. And as a result, Bermuda is impacted by non-domestic trash. And so it's a really good place to go and be a bit more safe and logistically possible than being out in the middle of the Pacific, for one, especially coming from the East Coast. And paddle boards were just the perfect vessel for us to take up our mission. And it's a really fast growing sport and, you know, low impact, zero carbon, and just a perfect fit for us to go out and combine science, adventure, and, you know, paddleboarding and create an educational web series for youth documenting our research out there around Bermuda. And so that was how we got started. And we went from that expedition and did a bunch of school visits around Bermuda. And so that really solidified our connection with youth and youth empowerment. And that carries through to today.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So has this been going on since 2012 then? Or
well, I guess officially, technically speaking, 2012 in the fall, and then started putting ideas together in 2013, applied to the National Geographic grant, got accepted through the first part of the application, and, you know, and then started planning the trip for June. So we actually launched on June 8th, World Oceans Day, 2014. And we, the other funny thing is that we actually didn't get the National Geographic grant. So we got through the first section of it and we were like, oh yeah, we're going to totally get this. And we started going ahead and making all our plans. And just so happened with the timing that we wanted to leave on, you know, June 8th, and we weren't going to find out until, you know, May 25th or some crazy thing. So we were like, whatever, we'll just like send it and hopefully we'll get this thing. And we didn't. And so we had to figure it out, but we did, and we made it happen. So
from that first trip, yeah, that is amazing. And I love that you guys, even though you were told no, like you didn't let that stop you, that you guys just kept going. But what was that like doing all this planning and convinced that you guys were going to win this grant to then find out you didn't? Like, what did you guys do?
I mean, it was pretty devastating getting the news, because we had sort of an inside connection who I had met at that workshop and who had been sort of mentoring us and encouraging us and was like, yeah, you guys are going to get this. And, you know, we heard later on, you know, that the concern why we didn't get it was concerns around feasibility of the project, which is pretty funny in hindsight. Because we pulled it off, but without them. But getting that news was definitely challenging, because, you know, we were still in Ithaca, New York, which is where I'm from and where I went to school. and, you know, just there like grinding every day, just trying to like finish up schoolwork and get the project organized and all this stuff. And so we really had to lean on friends and family a lot more than we had anticipated to you know, actually make the project successful. But we were able to do that, and you know, sent a lot of thank you letters.
Yeah. Your hand was sore.
I have a question too. What was the outcome of that trip? Like, what happened as a result?
Yeah,
like, so obviously Plastic Tides, but like, how did, like, did people invest? Like, what ended up happening?
Yeah, so I would say that the outcome of that trip was really what you just described. It was the formation of Plastic Tides, because we had gotten some sponsors on board. We had made really good connections in Bermuda. We were really well received there. You know, we had this video assets. We made 4 episodes for a web series, educational web series, 20 minutes in total, that we were actually releasing. We worked with a local editor production team in Bermuda. And so we were actually releasing episodes as we went around the island real time, which was super fun.
Yeah.
Because then we were able to go into schools and, you know, there was an awareness of what we were doing, and that was really cool. And so, you know, but yeah, specifically from that first trip, we worked with another organization called the Plastic Ocean Project to design this research device called a Manta Trawl that we pull behind our paddle boards. And that was one of the forms of research we were doing on that trip, was sampling surface plastics. So pulling this trawl to skim the surface of the water and collect plastic and analyze those samples. And so we were able to test out that device on that trip. And then we perfected that device for an expedition in the fall of 2014, which was researching plastic microbeads in upstate New York. And which was really, I would say, like the expedition that put us on the map in terms of, you know, an organization and our legitimacy in the plastic pollution space and the research that we did and the contribution to the whole microbead effort throughout 2015. And so, you know, in terms of what came from that first expedition, it was really, you know, the formation of Plastic Tides and us finishing that trip and saying, okay, we thought this was just going to be maybe like a one-off project and could lead to other opportunities. And, you know, got back and saw what we'd done. And then, you know, at this point, you know, we're essentially have become experts in plastic pollution over the previous year and a half. And now the microbead issue popped up on our radar and we realized it was something that we could address right at home. And so that was really inspiring and, you know, just went straight into that. And, you know, now here we are 6-7 years later.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome. So I know you guys empower the youth, like what, or educate the youth, but what's your main thing when you guys talk about this? Like, are you just laying on the facts of the negative aspects of plastic, or do you start even with just explaining how an ocean works, like what that ecosystem looks like?
So that's a great question, and it varies. Firstly, we try and keep it as positive as possible, and we try and approach the plastic pollution issue from a really inclusive perspective and try and bring people along, you know, rather than alienate people. And so we, you know, try and keep it as positive as possible and, you know, really looking at inspiring people around long-term solutions and changes in daily habits and things that are going to address plastic pollution issues and other climate change and sustainability issues more at the root and, you know, create more lasting systemic types of change. And, you know, to be honest, we haven't actually done that much in the way of school visits and outreach in the past few years, just because I moved and my partner moved and we're remote organization. And so we kind of went through this reorganizing process. And in 2019, we took a really big step back and said, hey, if we want to make this financially viable into the future, you know, we've got to sort of figure out what we're going to do and do well. We've been doing a lot of different things, working with brands, working with events, doing expeditions, leading our own expeditions, trying to lead trips like for corporate things or with adults, and, you know, sort of reaching in all these different directions, trying to do what we wanted to do and, you know, bring in some income to sustain the organization and further our initiatives, and, you know, just not necessarily really getting enough traction anywhere to make it work. And so we took a big step back and said, okay, what have we done so far? And what do we think we want to do in the future? You know, this landscape has changed immensely since we began in 2014. There's all these new organizations doing different things. And so what's the niche that we can fill now into the future where we feel like we can have the most impact with sort of this, you know, thing that we've created, this following, this brand awareness, this, you know, knowledge that we have, you know, and putting all of that together, the experience. And we looked at a lot of these projects that had been completed by students we'd connected with over the years. You know, things like looking at plastic utensils in their school, or planting an orchard, or planting native plants or trees around their school, and looking at, you know, local legislation, and said, you know, we're really all about youth empowerment. And it seems like there's an opportunity here to connect with individual students who are motivated to make a change and do something, you know, grassroots locally in their own school or community, and having the support, the backing, the agency, and the resources that we could provide, you know, from Plastic Tides with direct one-on-one mentorship from adults can have a huge impact and, you know, immensely increase the success rate and the impact of these projects. And so that's what we're focused on. And that's our Global Youth Mentorship Program. And so we've been doing that now for a couple of years, and we're really excited about where it's going. And we're still doing our expeditions, you know, our youth expeditions and other aspects of sort of what make our organization unique and make it fun and engaging. But in terms of where we really see the impact for the future and, you know, what we're putting most of our energy into is just expanding this, well, building a really strong foundation to expand this program, because what we're trying to show and hopefully accomplish is a really scalable model where, you know, right now we're working with half a dozen mentors and, you know, 15 students from the US and a variety of other countries. We actually have 10 different countries amongst that. So it's actually a pretty diverse group, which is cool. Yeah. But, you know, we feel that this, you know, program is really scalable in terms of reaching a lot of different kids and, you know, helping these projects succeed all over the place that are going to have that lasting impact. And so, yeah, that's,
yeah, what a target. I mean, kids are, I work in education, and kids are like the perfect target for this sort of work because they are the future. And it's kind of hard to sometimes change perspectives and mindsets of older people because they just have been doing what they've been doing. So I think, yeah, just getting to the kids is a really great step.
I agree with that. And kids are smart. Kids are so smart.
Yeah.
And when you give them that the resources, you know what I mean? Like you said, you have adults that are giving them what they need to accomplish their vision. And that's beautiful. Like that can really change. That's where this, you talked about changing the systems. Like you guys really are getting right down to it. And I think the system you guys are creating is beautiful. Like,
definitely.
Thank you. And that's, you know, we're really inspired by what we're seeing already as the program's growing. And, you know, it's really just as simple, I think, as providing that point of contact and that accountability for kids or anyone, you know, to accomplish something amidst all these other responsibilities and things. And so just having that person that's checking in with you on a weekly basis and just making sure that you're keeping up with it, you're making progress, and that you're going to, you know, reach your goal at the end. So
definitely. So I have a question for you. What does sustainability mean to you? I am not like so educated on sustainability, and this is like one of my goals for 2021 was just to learn more and like educate myself on like, what does sustainability actually mean? Like we hear it all the time. I feel like it's a buzzword, like sustainability, like we're a sustainable company. This is sustainable. Like what is sustainability? What does that actually mean when somebody is like, we're sustainable? I know it can mean a lot of different things, but what does it mean to you?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely a could be a huge spectrum. And I agree with you that it's one of these words that has been co-opted potentially for a lot of different uses. And so for me personally, sustainability means being able to do something indefinitely in harmony or balance with, you know, with nature and the environment. And I think that's the standard that we should all be aiming for. And, you know, as you get deeper and deeper into the, you know, layers and nuances of, you know, all these various aspects of even a single product, you realize that if you extrapolate anything out, you know, over a time scale of 100 or 1,000 years, that to achieve that sort of, you know, where you can say, no, this is going to be like something, we can just keep doing this. Like, we're not going to run out of X or Y or Z or going to destroy, you know, A or B over here, you know, or any of that. And I think we're definitely a really long way away from that in, you know, most of the pursuits of society, but it's been proven that it can be done. And I think there's, you know, looking to sort of indigenous wisdom and knowledge, traditional knowledge, ecological knowledge is a big part of that. And also I think, you know, for when it comes to sustainability, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see the way the world goes, but I think, you know, maybe relinquishing some of the things that we might envision as a modern society might be necessary to achieve that true sustainability. And that might take, you know, going through an evolution of a super, you know, ultra teched out society, and then, you know, being able to swing the other way from that or something. But I, yeah, I think that, yeah, that's sustainability.
That was
a beautiful, like, yeah, definition.
That was a beautiful explanation. What can we do on a day-to-day basis, like little habits that work towards that goal of sustainability, or like little changes that we can make in our day-to-day that are helpful to our planet?
I think the best thing for me to keep in mind, and this is when I'm asked this question, I could come at you with a number of different actions, specific actions that would be useful. However, I think the mindset of voting with your dollars for the future you believe in and that you want to live in is the most effective, because it's something that you can apply to any situation almost. And I think it's the most realistic, because at the end of the day, you know, market forces are the strongest forces in our society. And if we can have solutions that tie directly into just the sort of, you know, strongest force out there, then that makes the most sense. And so, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. And there's, everyone has different constraints, and you can't do it every single time you buy something. Maybe, you know, depending on your situation, maybe only sometimes, every once in a while, but nonetheless, you can keep that in mind. And when you do have the choice, voting for something that you believe in, because, you know, when you buy something, that's signaling the people making it that they should make more. And so I think that's the most direct way that you can influence sustainability. And of course, bring your reusable bottle and your utensils and your coffee mug and your shopping bags and all those other things that we aspire to as well. But You know, if you've got to do one thing, it's vote with your dollars.
So I have a question for you, because I know right now what I'm seeing like as a large trend is this compostable plastic, where it's made from plant-based plastics. And from my understanding is like in the correct systems, it can be like decomposed rapidly, but in our current systems, you know, that's not the case. So how do we break those barriers? Because I feel like those are companies riding on the trend of sustainability, but it's also confusing to the normal consumer.
You hit the nail on the head on those two things. It's companies riding on that trend, and it's confusing to the consumer. And so it's created a lot of issues. And going back as early as the beginning of our organization with the microbead issue in 2014 and 2015, this issue of biodegradable plastics came to the forefront when we were trying to create legislation to ban plastic microbeads in cosmetics. And then companies were working to introduce these loopholes into some of the state legislation and working to get into as much legislation as possible to allow microbeads made from PLA, which stands for polylactic acid, which is one of the most common plant-based polymer plastics that you can make from, you know, corn or soy. And it, although it's, you know, derived from a plant source, it doesn't actually break down in the marine environment, which is where we are finding these microbeads. So, you know, in essence, it would be having almost the same effect as a plastic microbead in terms of its ability to, you know, impact wildlife and aggregate toxins in the environment and things like that. And so, you know, these plastics, I think, are one of the most challenging aspects of the whole issue, because it's so nuanced and it's hard enough to get somebody's attention just to care about plastic pollution. And so to, you know, dive another layer deeper and understand the differences between, you know, something that says that it's biodegradable or compostable, or even what the difference between those two words mean, or, you know, other words that you could hear. And so it's one of those areas where I think it's created a big mess, but slowly but surely consumers and industry are sorting through it. And, you know, one of the biggest problems really that it created was with the general flow of industrial composters. And I think that's what you were referring to before in terms of, you know, some processes that can break it down. And the big difference between these materials and regular everyday compost is the time frame that they need to break down and also the conditions. And so something like PLA needs to be at high heat for an extended period of time in order to break down sufficiently. And when it does, you're not going to have nice fluffy brown soil left over if you were breaking down just an entire massive pile of, you know, PLA utensils or something. You wouldn't have something that was very desirable for even, you know, growing plants in. And so when you introduce that into a successful, you know, community compost, for instance, where they're churning out batches of great compost from food waste every 30 days, all of a sudden they have this, you know, fork that's just flying around in there for 3 months, and that, you know, it just doesn't work. And so, yeah, that's that with the biodegradable plastics. And it's just something that, yeah, I think to educate yourself about as you can, but yeah, it's definitely a tricky business.
Yeah. Well, cause we were looking for ways for our Babs Inc. right now, it's going to be all online until we can get a physical location. So trying to find packaging. And it was really confusing. I literally like had a certain packaging in my cart, took it out of my cart, was researching, because the one that looks the best is that compostable plastic. And it even like the bag says like, hey, compost me. And, you know, just because I had a background, because I also studied sustainability in school, I studied sustainable business. I was like, this doesn't really seem right. And then, then after going to, and it wasn't even the first or second website, I had to go into like the third or fourth, and then some blogs comparing paper to the plastic. And like, it's just upsetting for me, because I'm like, wow, on the outside, you really are having all of these people think that they're doing what's best. And really, it's not necessarily the case.
Oh, and that's the tragedy of it too. And it's so hard to, you know, to even show someone, you know, when they've got that positive energy that it's not the perfect thing. And so, well, that's, it's great to hear that you took the initiative to go the multiple layers deeper that were required, because, you know, it is, you know, we try and, uphold sort of like a backyard compostable standard. So, you know, like when you're looking at things, you know, that's the kind of, you know, framing that you can put it in, you know, or description, but it is still challenging. And it's, you know, that's not something that is going to be necessarily determined for you by the person selling it. It's something that you have to figure out for yourself, you know, or someone that you trust, like an organization. Can inform you about, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's almost, depending on how you look at it, it's almost better to use materials that are conventionally recyclable than something that's neither compostable or recyclable, because that, you know, not actually compostable bag is just going to end up in the trash like any other bag. And in a landfill like any other bag. And maybe if the landfill gets hot enough, someday it'll break down, which is a plus. But other than that,
it's kind of like shooting in the dark.
Yeah, and exactly. And the other aspect of the whole biodegradable plastics issue is the feedstocks for most of these are from, you know, conventional agriculture, GMO, agriculture, or, you know, just like really large scale non-sustainable agriculture that is growing monocultures and, you know, destroying soil, biodiversity, you know, all these things to say, oh, it's a compostable plastic, but, you know, you have to look to where it's really coming from.
Which honestly makes me just be like, shame on all these big companies that do this. Like, really shame on them. But yeah. I know all of this is like depressing. I want to know, because for me, like, I had the similar background of you, where I grew up out in the outdoors, and I feel like that's what really brought me to learning about sustainability in a formal education scenario, because of my upbringing and everything, and just my love for being outside. Where, when you have all of these dreams, like if you picture the world in like 20 years, 50 years, like what are you seeing with everything that you're doing?
That's a challenging question for sure. I think that more than anything, a society where these solutions around sustainability are flawlessly integrated into our everyday lives in such a way that they're just so normal. And I think, you know, smoking cigarettes is one of the best examples to point to for, you know, what we could achieve around plastics and sustainability in general. In that, in the 1940s, there were ads on TV that would say, you know, doctors prefer camels and things of that nature. And so, you know, going from that to where we are now in our understanding of, you know, of tobacco smoking is rather astonishing. You know, I can only imagine being someone, you know, who would be old enough to remember that. And now, you know, being alive now and seeing the commercials on TV, you know, it's like in one lifetime, it's a full 180 reversal. So, you know, I think anything's possible.
I think that would be beautiful. I'm hoping that. I had visited Germany. This was probably back in 2014, but even just seeing how they handle their recycling and their compost and their trash, like even witnessing other countries for me has kind of brought me a little bit hope. But I think to go back with what you said about how the biggest way to make a difference is voting with your dollar, I think specifically in our country, that's huge, because just from what Americans want and what Americans are like saying, like, this is cool, this is the style, it trickles down to a lot of pollution in a lot of different places.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does. And, you know, I haven't been to Germany, but I've been to some places. I've been to the Netherlands. And it is cool to go to some of the European countries and see, you know, how things can be done differently and get a little bit of glimpse of that. But yeah, as you said, you know, I think, you know, in America, it's, you know, we have a different driver for a lot of things. And so you have to kind of go with what's going to work.
Oh, man. Do you think coming from New York to California, have you even noticed a difference in how people view sustainability or how they view plastic and just their waste in general?
A little bit. So I'm from Ithaca, New York, which is a very, I would say, like, environmentally and socially conscious, maybe like perhaps even one of the most so in on the East Coast. And so, you know, coming from where I grew up, I live in Santa Cruz, which I feel like has a pretty similar social climate to Ithaca, which is one of the reasons I like it here. But yeah, I mean, I think in California, there's definitely greater awareness for a lot of things just throughout the general population, for sure. But I wouldn't say like ubiquitously by any means. And I think you see, you know, even some things here, which I wouldn't expect to see, you know, like the way that people leave trash on some of the beaches here and things of that nature, I would never imagine seeing on the East Coast. So it's kind of a little bit of both. I think, you know, outwardly, in terms of organizations and things you'd see in the media and stuff, California gives off, you know, the eco vibe and kind of sells it a little harder, but I don't know if everyone's walking the talk.
I can see it. Yeah. I can see it. People are trying to be these anti-plastic clout chasers, but we see you with your straws. I'm just
kidding. Yeah, exactly.
With your Starbucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. All right, I think we're gonna go into our beats breakdown. So I think this song is perfect for us, because until tonight we were all strangers, well, except for the butcher and I. So this song is by French Cuffs, and we are so thankful to have.
And also, it's sorry to cut you off.
Oh yeah,
it's
no.
Our first female artist. Our beats breakdown.
You're right.
We are excited for that. Girl power. All right, the butcher, what do you got to say?
Tony, scream that shit.
Hey. Off, pack it up, in store for safekeeping.
Fuck yes. Girl power. Loved your voice.
Yes. Strangers.
Not your voice. Her voice for sure, though.
Shut up.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're about it.
Yes.
I'm here for it. Me too. I'm going to be playing that on the car ride home.
Yes.
Complicated Strangers.
Yeah. Get my Spotify.
Yeah.
We'll get it. We're going to put the Spotify. We'll tag her IG. The whole works. So thank you. Thanks, French Cuffs.
Yes.
All right.
Let's
say.
Hey. Wait, how do you say that? Parle français? No.
Yeah, parle français.
Parle français.
I'm not even going to try this. I'm not going to attempt it. But let's move into our beats breakdown.
No.
No, let's move into our Babs moment.
Our favorite Boomer Junior here with the memory loss.
Seriously.
The Butcher is a Boomer Junior. Literally breathing, walking.
It's true.
I love it. All good.
All right, we're moving into our Babs moment. And
you know,
KMOFO, I think you should start us off. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I was two different types of Babs. So one, I was a busy ass bitch because this weekend was so busy. Had my homie Irma in town. We did a photo shoot for Babs Inc. And then Sunday I was like brunching and just going all around the town, hanging out with everyone. So that was busy. And then this morning I was a baffling ass bitch because So, Dale, this is my boyfriend. He, like, last night when he was sleeping, he said the name Rachel. And I, like, last night, I was like, who the fuck is Rachel? Like, all pissed. And so this morning, I, like, wake up, and he can just tell. He's like, what's up? Like, what's wrong? And I'm like, did you have any dreams last night? Like, I was just fucking pissed. And then, basically, yeah, Rachel is his cousin. nothing crazy, but I woke up this morning like so mad, and he called me out. He was like, what, did you go through my Instagram followers, like, who do I follow named Rachel? And I was like, you know what, Dale, you can shut up. You can work.
Oh.
Yeah, he was like, came with the shots. But so those were my Babs moments of the week.
Those are pretty good, Rachel.
You too. You too.
I'm kidding. Okay, so my Babs moment. I love the busy ass bitch because that. Oh my god! Yeah, I was just fucking busy, like. That's all I did. I was just constantly doing things.
Grind mode.
Just really in grind mode. Like, I'm just busy ass bitch. But I did get to hang out with friends, and the photo shoot that we had, I had the most fun I've had in like a while. And I got to meet the people who created the brand Be a Good Person, which was like my highlight of like, just
the year.
Probably. So busy ass bitch, and what's a B word for happy? Or just joyful.
Oh god.
I was just happy. Fuck it. I was just a happy bitch. Christian, what kind of bab are you this week? Or the past few weeks?
I was this weekend. I was a bouncing ass bunny.
Yes,
that is the best one I've heard thus far.
Seriously.
And that we were going. My girlfriend Celine and I, we've been trying to set aside our Saturdays to do some hikes and getting up there. And she's actually French. And so we have a little joke that we call each other a lapin, which is a rabbit or a bunny, de chemin, which is of the trail. So we're like, lapin de chemin. And so yeah, I was a bouncing ass bunny. I was a shama up there on the, a lapa, I should say, up there on the trails.
Hell, that's yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, we got up there and in Big Sur, where there's a hike that we've done actually a couple times in a row recently because we've been really enjoying it. But it gets you right up over the ocean, and I don't know if you've ever been out here, but it's that part of the coastline is really beautiful, and you can hike up a little ways. It's just food for the soul. The expansive ocean and just green mountains coming right down to it. So
that sounds like heaven on earth, yeah, right,
seriously.
There.
Yeah, good. Some solid bab territory.
Yes.
Some bouncing ass bunnies over,
yes,
there. Oh man. Well, where can people find you if they want to learn more about you, what you do? Do you have YouTube, the Instagram?
Yeah, pretty much on the gram, at Crisscross Shaw is how you can see what I'm up to, where I'm bouncing around, and and at Plastic Tides, for all things Plastic Tides. We're actually going through a big Instagram redesign right now, which it's cool. It's going to look really good. So we're going to have like our whole history of our organization sort of up there on the Instagram for people to check out. At Crisscross Shaw, at Plastic Tides. There's a bunch of good stuff out there on YouTube if you want to check out our educational web series from back in 2014 around Bermuda, or watch us freeze our butts off on the Erie Canal in upstate New York. It's all on the YouTubes, the Vimeos, Google Plastic Tides, and dig in. And yeah, it's been super fun talking to you. So.
Yeah, this has been amazing. Thank you for joining us. We are really looking forward to this. So.
I really am looking forward to digging into sustainability this year. And I try to create my own reusable bag. It's in the works still, but yeah, sustainability. And I love what you said about just using your voting power. That was honestly like such a brilliant answer that I think is just so overlooked. Like, we're always like, you could do this, this, and this for any issue, but we never say like, dude, just use your voting power. Like, that's really what it comes down to. So thank you so much for being on our show. You guys can we'll post all of the links in our description.
Facts.
I think any final words? Yeah,
you know, just one thing, you know, thank you so much for your kind words, you know, regarding that answer. And I appreciate that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do with Babs Inc. And I really love the idea of taking things that are already made from the thrift store and upcycling them and giving them a new life. It's just so core to the kind of thinking that we need to have to solve these solutions. And it ties right into voting with your dollars too. So, you know, it's awesome. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That just made my day. That's like our little baby right there.
Yes.
Little Babs baby.
Yeah, let's watch that baby grow up.
Yes.
Cool. Let's hope it skips that awkward braces phase, though. You know what I'm saying? Oh, awesome. Well, y'all, I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Catch the links in the description. Babs out.
Woo-hoo!